Hello, and welcome to episode 102 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chen, also known as Ben304. Welcome to episode 102 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. How are you, Francisco?
I am well, Ben. How are you? Why am I talking like this?
I am also well as well.
Let's stop talking
well,
like
well,
this.
Well, well, well.
I pay you, you... let's stop. Okay, no, wait, let's not alienate the listeners more than we already have.
True.
Anyway, yeah, I'm good. How are you? How have you been? How have you been this week? How's everything been going?
I've been busy.
Yeah? What have you been up to?
I've been really busy. A guy died, so we went and put him in the ground.
That happened, sorry.
That's okay. It was a long way away, though. It was like 9 hours of driving that day.
Wow. It's a lot of driving to bury someone.
Yeah,
you didn't have him in the car, did you?
What's that, sorry?
You didn't have him in the car with you, did you?
Nah.
Okay,
he wouldn't have fit.
Okay, good.
And yeah, I've been out pretty much every night this week, catching up with people and going to dinners and, you know, people having birthdays and people dying. It's all happening.
Yeah. Dinners are good. So, you get fed.
Yeah. Tomorrow, one of my friends from high school that I haven't seen in like 4 or 6 years is coming into town, so I'm going to catch up with them.
Oh, cool.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm good. Same. Just kind of been going around and doing stuff and showing games and working on games and not eating as much as you, I don't think. Because I haven't been to any dinners, but there's a big dinner coming up this week, which is Thanksgiving, but I'm going to be on a bus, so I'm not going to be having Thanksgiving dinner. But that's fine, because Thanksgiving is about being with family, and I will be with family just on a bus.
That's good.
Yeah, so it's all good. Yeah, last weekend was Gamer X East, as well as practice. And I didn't go to practice this year, but I did show my game at Gamer X East on Saturday. And it was good. It was an interesting setup because this was the first year that they were doing Gamer X East, and they had it at the Microsoft building in Times Square, which is usually
where that is.
You do know where that is. It's right around the corner from Senor Frog's.
Yeah.
Did I tell you?
He's a crazy looking frog.
He is. Did I tell you that I walked by within the time between when you left and now, and I saw the frog outside?
Like someone dressed as the frog?
Yes, someone dressed as the frog.
I took one look at that frog and I thought, that frog is trouble. I even told you.
You did. We had a little laugh about that. But anyway...
Senor Frog is—he's a bad dude.
He's a bad dude. Don't let him take you to Mexico, or he'll get you in trouble.
Yeah.
The Microsoft building in Times Square—it's basically where Playcrafting has most, if not all, their events. And this time around, they were hosting Gamer X East, and Playcrafting asked me and several other developers to show their games, and we did. And there was some cool stuff on display. There was one game that I was particularly amused with, which was another point and click adventure game, which was actually being made by a guy who took my adventure game design theory class a while back. It's called The Low Road. And I described it as basically like if Jazz Punk was a 2D point and click adventure game, because the style of it is very sort of reminiscent of, not so much the art style of Jazz Punk, but the art style is very, sort of like retro 70s, kind of like, not shag necessarily, because it's a bit more detailed.
Look, almost 60s.
Yeah, it's sort of like 60s, 70s. It takes place in the 70s. But it's very bright and colorful and very high res detailed. It's pretty cool looking. And you play as a spy, a newly hired spy in like the automotive industry, I think. And, you, I played very little of it, but what I did play involved some interesting puzzles. One where you had to call a person and convince her that you were someone from her past. And it was a dialogue puzzle, but in order to successfully navigate it, you had this dossier or of files about like what high school she went to and what street she lived on and that sort of thing. So you could kind of make yourself sound more convincing, and you had to convince her that you were who you said you were. And like, at first I was like, oh, hey, it's Claire or whatever. And she's like, oh, you don't sound like you. And then the option is like, clear your throat and try a different voice. So I did that, and she's like, oh, you sound even less like you now. It's very much a comedy adventure game. And then there was another bit where there was a man who spoke only in rhyme, which amused me because the guy who made the game was like, oh, you're going to hate this guy. Because in my class, I mentioned that one of the things that you should avoid doing was having characters who talk in rhyme, because it can be very twee and silly. But this one gets a pass because it serves a purpose, because you actually have to solve a puzzle where you kind of, it's kind of like the insult sword fighting in Monkey Island 3, where it has to rhyme. And you have to kind of communicate with him through rhyme, and then write a poem, and then write a haiku, and then he gives you something.
I mean, and then, some people want to write twee and silly games.
Sure, and it fit the tone of this game very well. And then the third part, which I gave up on because I got frustrated a bit, was there's a bit where you have to pick a guy's pocket, but you have to replace his ID with your ID, and then it shows a close-up of the pocket, and you have to like navigate the objects around inside the pocket so they don't touch each other or the sides of the pocket thing, which was very strange but very good. So yeah. That was that. And then I didn't go back on Sunday very naughtily, because I went to the practice after party and was out until 3 a.m. doing karaoke. So that was fun. Yeah, so the rest of the week I kind of took it easy and, you know, worked and stuff. And I'm coming along on my game, which is nice. And yeah.
Good.
So, yeah. Did you have any stories? Why did I say that? I'm in a weird mood this morning.
You really are. This is
afternoon, I suppose. Yeah,
that's fun. It's okay. I haven't really been playing anything. I've actually been too busy to play much. I've been playing, and I really had to think about
it. I didn't ask you what you've been playing. I asked you if you did anything interesting, extracurricular.
Well, I told you that.
Yeah, you did. You did. All right. So then, what have you been playing?
Yeah. I've been playing Untold Legends: Dark Kingdom.
You mean Boob Sword?
The hardest game title to remember. It's harder than Stories the Path of Destinies to remember.
I see. Well, tell me about
this
game.
It's not good.
No?
Don't play it.
Okay. I wasn't planning on it, but why isn't it good? What's wrong with it?
It's bland. It's just insipid. It's just this flavorless nothing, this vacuous hole that you hit the buttons and things die, and then you keep doing that.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I bought Tails, which has finally been released for AGS.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to playing that.
Mm. I got a free copy because I did a voice for that game.
Yeah. I think I play a
drunk innkeeper, but I don't remember because it was a while ago that I did it.
That game's been in production for quite a while. I'm glad to see it finished.
It has, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so congratulations to Andrea and Screen 7.
Yeah, excellent work. I'm glad. It's always good to see an ambitious project come to life, you know.
It is.
And be released. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, Adventure X is this weekend, but I'm not going. But you all can watch it. Actually, by the time this goes to air, I would probably assume that the first day will be more or less over, because London is
probably
fine.
No one's listening to this because they're all paying attention to Adventure X.
That's true. They're probably watching the live stream. So, whatever.
That's fine.
It's okay. We'll be here for you after Adventure X.
Yeah, we'll be the net to catch you once you fall from such great heights. I don't even...
Please continue with your playlist.
It's a quarter past 1 in the morning. Yeah. I'm sipping tropical juice and my cat's going berserk.
Why is he going berserk?
I don't know. He's just running and jumping off things.
Okay.
I gave him some treats, and I think that was probably a bad idea.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Anyway, what else have you been playing?
That's it. The only thing I've been playing is
really
Untold Legends: The Dark Kingdom. Yeah, I've been so busy, man. I've been out every night this week, and I've been, you know.
I know, but you mentioned that you weren't really enjoying it, so I'm just interested to see that you're sticking with it despite.
At this point, I'm going to try and finish it unless it gets stupidly unfair or something like that. I'm going to try and finish it. But yeah, I've been between going out and practicing guitar, like that's most of my week gone, and then I've had just a little bit to play this game. So,
well, yeah. Fair enough.
What about you, Francisco?
Well, what about me? What did I play? I finally got around to trying my friend Dean's game Vidar at GamerX East. He's been making this game for a really long time and promoting the hell out of it, and I think it's coming out on Steam Early Access in January. And I'm a terrible friend because I still hadn't played it, so I finally got around to playing it. So it's an RPG, it's made in RPG Maker, but it doesn't look like it's made in it kind of looks like it's made in RPG Maker, but it doesn't look like a stock RPG Maker game where everyone just kind of, you know, looks the same. Like I Am Caligula, for example.
Right.
Anyway, Vidar is, it's apparently a really depressing game where everyone dies. And you are this, you're this stranger who comes to this village called Vidar, and it's randomized every time you play the order in which the villagers die, but I think there's something like 24 villagers or something like that. And every night one of them dies. So basically the whole bulk of the gameplay is just kind of getting to know the people and figuring out what they want or whatever, because I don't believe there's any way to prevent them from dying. But their stories and stuff change based on the order in which they die, so yeah,
Lot of people.
It is an interesting premise, and it's a lot of people, and I played a little bit of it, and I went into a cave with wolves and lit some lanterns and got bitten by wolves, so it was fun.
Did you die? Were you the first of the 24?
Well, there was no permadeath. It just sort of resets you back to a few seconds before you get killed, so.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was nice, and so when it comes out on Steam, you all should check it out. Vidar. Vidar.
Vidar.
V as in vol.
Oh, I thought it was like the letters of rabid.
No.
Which is like, oh, he got bitten by a wolf. That makes sense. But no,
it's ravid, if anything.
It doesn't quite
also
work the same.
If it was Bidar, it would sound a little bit too much like bidet, and I think that would be detrimental.
Or bizarre,
yeah. I don't know. Anyway, what else did I play aside from that? I also played a little bit of The Low Road, as I mentioned.
Yes.
I played a tabletop game. I played some more of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, Case 3.
Yes, you've mentioned that one several times.
Yeah, I've been playing that over a long period of time.
How's it going?
It's not going well. That game is hard.
Okay. Well, it's meant to be, isn't it?
Yeah, because the thing is, you're playing against Sherlock, and Sherlock always solves the crime within, like, 5 moves. And the way that you score it is, for every location you travel to, you have to subtract 10 points. You start at 0, it's like golf. You have to subtract 10 points from your score. And, you have to add 10 points to your score for every location that you visit. I believe in this case, we visited 17 locations.
Is that 170 points?
Yes. And so then you're supposed to, at the end of the case, when you've collected all the information, you're asked some questions. And if you get them right, you subtract a certain number of points. And then your
score. I don't suppose there's one that's like 167.
No,
you can just get that one right.
They're usually about 20.
Oh, so that's not very good.
No, this case, Sherlock did it in 5 moves, and I believe he got a score of 100. And I think our score, I don't remember what our score was, but it was like 100, and it was pretty bad.
It was more than 100.
It was more than 100, yes. So,
what a shame.
The thing, too, that was a bit frustrating in this case is usually you have the main case and there's, like, little sub-things, that little details that come up among the investigation that sort of, you know, you can get bonus points for them. But in this case, in order to get the bonus points, you had to investigate stuff that had absolutely nothing to do with the current case. Like, at least in the first two, they were sort of related to the main case. Like, there's in the second one, there was a bit about, like, there's a mysterious statue found in the guy's study, and it's facing a certain way, and you're supposed to figure out why he did that, and that's the bonus thing. But in this one, it's about a woman who murders a guy and has no recollection of doing so, but the stuff that you're supposed to investigate at the beginning of the case, it's sort of talking about how Holmes is in a funk, and Watson is reading out newspaper articles of cases that might be interesting, and Holmes is like, no, I'm not interested in those. And you're actually supposed to investigate those as the bonus thing, which is stupid. One of them involves going to an Italian circus, which has absolutely nothing to do with anything.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I suppose. So yeah, there's that. And then I also, last night, I played Crow, which, if you're not already a patron of Anatoly Das Nostalgic, you should go and become one. Because he posted a video about this game, this Russian game called Crow, which is basically it's sort of a weird set of arcade games based on Russian fairy tales and folklore.
Excellent.
Yeah, did you watch the video?
I have not yet, no.
Okay, well, I watched the video, and Anatoly put some links in the video to... you can actually play the game on your browser through DOSBox, so I did. I tried it myself, because apparently the controls are terrible, and it's true, the controls are terrible. But... It was really fun. Like, the first, the levels, there's no story thread. It's kind of like WarioWare, I guess, in that it's just mini game after mini game. But it made me laugh a lot, because you're playing as this guy and you're basically just beating up fairy tale characters. Like, you're the first level, you have to play a game, you know, a cup game of guess what's under the cup with a cat. That's very, it's messed up. It's a messed up looking cat. It's this horrible cat. But the cool thing about the video that Anatoly posted was he actually showed, like, where each fairy tale was from and, like, different animated versions of them. So I won't spoil.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I won't spoil too much of it for you so you can watch the video. But the second level, you're fighting this guy who's attacking you with a bucket and a pike. And I don't mean a pike like a weapon. I mean a pike as in a fish. Yeah. And you're basically just punching him. And your life meter is measured in apples.
That sounds like every Russian fairy tale I've ever heard.
And then, when you beat him up, you ride on his stove and chase a hut with chicken legs. Racing game. And then you have to, like, hit the hut until it dies, and then after that you have to fight Baba Yaga, who's hitting you with a broom.
isn't there a Russian, like, I don't want to say witch, but like an old woman that does like magic stuff that like flies a cauldron around?
Yeah, that's Baba Yaga.
Right. Yeah.
Or okay. Baba Yaga, as you would say it in Russian.
Because I thought she was the chicken legs. I didn't realize she also flew in a cauldron.
A mortar, actually.
A mortar, that's right.
Yeah,
yes.
She has a hut on chicken legs.
Such a bizarre implement with which to fly.
Yeah, and she flies around in a mortar.
Just a big lump of stone.
Well, they're bowls. They're big lumps of stone.
Yeah, they're big lumps of stone that you grind seeds and herbs in.
Well, she grinds the bones of her victims or something. I don't know.
Well,
Russian fairy tales are just as weird as German fairy tales that are just as weird as all sorts of fairy tales.
As our fairy tales. All fairy tales are weird.
Well, our fairy tales come from the German ones, the Brothers Grimm. Anyway, enough fairy tale etymology. I just found it really funny that you're just fighting against an old woman with a broom and knocking her out. And then there's this level that's terrible, that's a swamp level, where you have to jump from paddock to paddock, or lily pad to lily pad, or just tufts of grass, and that one's really hard. I couldn't finish that one. And then in the last level, you have to fight a dragon, and I didn't get to that one because I rage quit after the swamp level. But apparently, it took Anatoly 20 years to beat that swamp level. So
there you go.
I guess I have another 20 years to practice.
I don't think. Well, I wonder if you really stuck to it and just got angry and determined, and just I wonder how long it would actually take.
I don't know, but I don't feel like getting angry and determined and trying it. But anyway, no, it's very short. It's only those, you know, five or six levels, I think. So yeah, you should watch Anatoly's video, and you should check out the game. It's pretty funny, actually.
I definitely will.
Yeah, it's good. It's good for a nice diversion for like half an hour or so.
Good.
So yeah, that's that. So shall we move into this week's topic?
Let's do our topic.
Let's do our topic. I've been talking too much, so you introduce it.
Okay, this week we're going to talk about computer games and adventure games. Basically, we want to talk about making worlds reactive and respond to player input, player choice, and that sort of stuff, which is a pretty interesting topic because, you know, obviously worlds in an adventure game are reactive. When you click a thing, you get a reaction from them. But we also want to talk about, like, you know, the consequence of little choices and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So,
why don't you begin? Because you made a lot of games back in the day, and I've been seeing that Trolls has been doing a playthrough of live streaming stuff, and he recently did Piss this week. And Piss is a game that we've talked about quite a lot on this podcast, but one of the things that sort of sets it apart from most of the other games that you've done is that it's very dense as far as side and optional activities in it. And I think that part of the reason that Piss was so well received is because of the world building and because of that ability to do so many things in it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I think one thing interesting watching it after not having experienced the game and forgetting a lot about what happens in the game and what you can do, it's really struck me. There's times when you have to make a choice, and it's a small choice, and it's not linked to the main plot or anything like that, but it still makes you think, I wonder what the outcome of this choice will be. Mm-hmm. And like, for instance, there's one moment where in the graveyard you come across a fellow who has no head, but is a body that's holding on to two heads.
Yes.
One of which has green skin, one of which has blue skin. And they're sort of arguing over whose body the body is and which head gets the body. It's this kind of messed up fantasy, this dark, you know, twisted thing. Like, you know, this body carrying.
Where did you come up with that idea anyway?
I don't know. It's probably from the guy in Planescape Torment that has a wooden head.
Oh,
and
you
have to find his head.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That guy was fun.
And he runs around the hole banging into
things. Yeah, and he just goes, like, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a kind of choice, you know, and as you sort of are talking to them, one of them says, you know, you can say to them, you know, well, why don't you just look at the color of the skin on the body? And then you'll know sort of who, it'll be pretty obvious. You've got green skin, he's got blue skin. If the body's got green, it's his. If it's blue, it's yours. But when you look at it, the skin turns out to be brown. Mm-hmm. So you can lie and you can say, you know, and one of the guys says, you know, oh, you know, I'll give you a copper for your efforts when you tell him that it's blue skin. So, you know, the game's leading you on there. If I remember rightly, if you go with his thing, you get the least reward. You get like one point. If you choose the other guy, I think you get two or you get none. I can't remember. It's one of the two. And if you pick the honest answer, you get nothing. But later on, you get twice as much. So, little thing of like, you know, you might think, oh, I missed out on getting a coin then. But then sort of, you know, 40 minutes time, someone's like, oh, by the way, you did that. They wanted us to give you this, and you're like, oh, look, I won out in the end. And, you know, there's lots of little stuff like that. So it's this idea of, like, this world reacting to your choices. But, you know, I don't want to get too deep into philosophy or anything like that, but...
Why not? That's what this podcast is for.
Well, yeah.
Wait, when you say when you say philosophy, do you mean like design philosophy or like
I'm old not talking about statues life philosophy? Philosophy.
I like how...
I'm not Zeno.
Okay. What?
I'm not Zeno.
What from Scientology?
No, Zeno, the guy, the ancient guy with the tortoise and the arrow. And
right. Never mind. I was thinking of Scientology. I'm sorry. Anyway, please continue.
Why would I reference Scientology?
I don't know, because you surprise me sometimes.
You were talking about philosophy, so I mentioned a philosopher.
Okay.
Anyway. If I may continue.
Yes, you may, sorry.
I broke linearity down in my head in adventure games to three distinct forms of linearity. Because we always talk about... non-linearity. Because we always talk about non-linearity, but... It's such a broad topic, I think it needs some further refining and sub-classification.
Sure.
So I took it upon myself to do that, and I came up with three different types. You have journey non-linearity, you have destination non-linearity, and then you have mechanical non-linearity.
Did you come up with this in the bathtub, by the way?
What's that, sorry?
Did you come up with this in the bathtub?
No.
Okay.
I don't take baths, I take showers.
Well, you know what I mean. Anyway.
Right, so let's talk about Shardlight and the non-linearity present in the main narrative of Shardlight.
Okay.
Shardlight's non-linearity is destination non-linearity. You get to the place in the plot where you arrive at the destination and you have to make a choice.
Right, at the very
and
end.
And that choice... takes an instant effect.
Yes.
You know? And Deus Ex does the same thing. You get to the end of the journey and it goes, right, here you are, choose which destination you arrive at.
Mm-hmm.
Journey destination is like in Techno Babylon.
Is that your There's cat meowing?
Probably. He probably wants to go out. hang on, I'm just going to go open the window. I'll be back in a sec.
Welcome special guest Montgomery White. Well, I'll talk a little bit while the window's being opened for the cat and say that, yeah, destination, we'll talk about the reactive world in Shardlight after we talk about the destination bit and all this, so, yes.
Hello, I'm back.
Has he jumped out the window now?
He has. Yeah, I can't hear him because I got the headphones on.
Right.
So, yeah, but, an example of journey non-linearity is, let's say, Techno Babylon. There's a point where you have to get through a door, and the door's locked.
Uh-huh.
There are three different ways of unlocking the door. Unlocking the door, each of those three different ways, doesn't really do anything, but it lets you pick how you take the journey, which way you go through it. It doesn't change the end of the game. It doesn't change anything, but you choose to play how you want to play.
Right, so it's kind of like the three paths in Fate of Atlantis.
Right, you're not changing your destination, but you're changing how the journey is.
Right.
Mechanical non-linearity, which is the third kind, is a little harder to nail down. But basically, it's allowing the players to fuck with the world, even if it's not letting them solve puzzles.
Right.
Even if it's not, you know, it's letting them push a box to the side. It's letting them drink a drink on the table. It's not really relevant always to the main plot, but it's just giving them a bit of freedom to just mess around with the world, lift things up, look underneath them, poke them, smell them, you know. A lot of the times in the sort of the nine verb GUIs, like, or, you know, like Sam and Max, a lot of the fun there just comes from playing around with the world and see what happens.
Right. Like you did in City.
Yeah. So there's the three kind of types of non-linearity as I've broken them down for myself is destination non-linearity, where you pick your destination for the plot, journey destination, where you're still heading to the same place, but you take a slightly different path to get there, and mechanical non-linearity, where you can just mess around with stuff in the world. So to me, at this point in my thinking about design, the most interesting of these is probably a mix of mechanical and journey non-linearity,
same.
because we've done sort of destination
non-linearity.
And Shardlight's ending has the same problem for me as kind of Deus Ex Human Revolution's ending. Yeah. It's like, pick your ending now.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's like, oh, shit, that's a lot, you know? And it kind of, I don't want to say it's shallow, but it's not a very, you know, oh, you did this thing, here's the consequence.
Right.
It really feels like, well, pick an ending.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, I don't think I'm interested so much in having different endings to the story. I'm more interested in getting there my own way, or allowing players to get there in their own way.
Yeah, you know? I agree. I've definitely moved on to that design goal, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Jordan 8 definitely had destination non-linearity to an extent.
Yeah.
You kind of get to the end. And it's not as clearly pick your ending.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still like, all right, here you are. What are you going to do? What's it going to be?
Yeah,
but, you know, for what we're talking about now, which is reactive game worlds,
yes,
it's really, we're really talking about sort of journey and mechanical non-linearity. You were telling me today something about something that you've implemented. Do you want to elaborate on that and maybe think about how it relates to these?
Which one? I've told you a lot lately.
The Ashes.
Oh, right. Yeah, so I have, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a bit where I was thinking a lot about how to make conversation. Well, throughout the course of this game, I've been thinking a lot about how to make conversations interesting. You know, because in a detective game, the bulk of the gameplay is talking to characters, and it can get a little bit mechanical or just stiff to just, you know, click to a character and ask them
the options.
Yeah, ask them the same questions, you know. You know, if you ask every character about themselves, I want them to have a unique answer and not just be like, well, this is what I do, this is what I say, blah, 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 you know. Mm. It's been challenging, but I've been trying to figure that out as I go. So one of the things that I was interested in doing, and which I've especially been trying to handle, is this goes more towards the journey thing, but I've talked about the fact of making the cases reaching an unsolvable point. Well, I guess this is kind of on a tangent from what you asked me about specifically, but I'll talk a little bit about this and then I'll address what you asked me about specifically.
Sure.
So the unsolvable case situation, and in the first two cases, it's pretty difficult. Actually, it's fairly difficult to get it unless, well, I'm rambling now.
Gosh.
This is the fun of not editing podcasts. So it's not super difficult to get to the unsolvable state, but it's also not super easy. Like, you have to screw up, and it's pretty apparent in certain situations that you're screwing up. So what I realized in my third case is from the buildup of the stuff you've done in the first two cases, the only way that you can reach an unsolvable case in the unsolvable state in the third case is if you've done bad things in the first two cases. So, like, I'm playing around with the idea, like, there's one location that you go to where you find a character who you could optionally talk to in the second case, and if you pissed him off, once you enter that location, he's like, oh, what are you doing here? Get out of here. And that location is now blocked off to you. So
that's fun.
It's a repercussion from an earlier action. So, but now to address the question that you asked me, which kind of ties into the same thing. Yeah, there's a situation in the third case where you're investigating a person who burnt to death. And as part of the investigation, you can pick up the ashes. So there was two things, actually, that I told you about. One was the idea that, okay, so you've picked up these ashes and you're walking around with them, and I've made the point that since this person kind of burnt to death, these ashes are putrid and smelly. So I thought, well, if you're this character and you're carrying around these putrid, smelly ashes in your pocket, you're going to stink too. So people are probably going to comment on this. So I then decided to go in and just, as a fun little throwaway thing, if you're carrying around the ashes and you go to places where there are characters, they all make comments like, oh god, what is that smell? Oh, what is that? And there's even a couple of characters that if you try and talk to them, they're like, oh god, get away from me, you stink, and they won't talk to you until you've gotten rid of them. So that, when I implemented that, I thought to myself, you know, this is definitely a lesson that I've learned from working on other games. Like, it made me think that this would be something that if Dave had played the game and it wasn't in there, he would in an email be like, oh, by the way, I don't know if this is feature creep, but maybe you should have the people react to the fact that this guy's carrying around ashes, you know? Yeah. It just struck me as something that Dave would probably advise to add just for a bit more of immersion. Because Dave is into that sort of thing, too. He definitely likes idea of reactive worlds.
And people really notice that, you know. Yeah. One thing I really liked in Shardlight is, like, when you tell, for example, Denby to draw sort of Angus on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. After a while,
yeah.
But he'll always be Angus to me.
The person that he draws sort of comments on that. And,
right.
And, you know, it's... Denby's probably the best character in Shardlight for that. Like, you know, because when you're in his place and you're clicking on the stuff, he sort of comments and everything. And actually, Megan O'Neill told me that that's probably her favorite part of the game, is just the idea that there's someone there just talking about, like, why did you do that? You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, there's also like the little gag where when you ask Denby about where he got the chalk and he says, oh, I made it from Marishka's dandruff. If you've talked to Marishka already, she says, oh, you just lost your free pumpkin for the week, but it's only if you've talked to her. So,
yeah. But, you know, it really reminds me of role-playing games. And, you know, I remember when you were playing Arcanum and I told you, take all your clothes off and run around and talk to people.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, you know, my gracious madam, have you no standards? You know, it's this really, and it really doesn't do much in terms of changing the game or anything like that. Right. But you're walking around in your underwear. Of course, people should say something.
Exactly. You
know? Of course, they should.
You should be. Yeah, I feel that the game should reward you for doing stuff like that. You know. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're exploring the world in terms of seeing, well, what happens if I do this? What happens if I do that? And if it doesn't do anything, you think, oh, well, that's a shame, you know.
Sure.
But if there is something, isn't it the most delightful thing?
Yeah, and I mean, you know more than anyone else because you've done it a lot. Is, you know, you've always talked about burying little secrets in games that it's fun for people to find. And if they find it, then they can feel special about being one of the few people to find it.
Yeah, and they always feel clever, you know. It's always like, oh, did anyone else find this? It's that sort of that feeling of, oh, I found something that maybe no one else found, and that's having a world react to you, you know.
Exactly. Another thing, go ahead.
Oh, it's just this feeling of a world. You know, there might only be three things in the whole game, but the fact that you found one of them makes you think, well, what else is there?
Right.
What else can I find in here? And it makes you really interested to keep trying to find more stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why I loved adventure games. Not for the puzzles or anything like that. It's to find the dumb jokes that the designers hid in the thing. That's what, like, I started playing with Beavis and Butthead when I was a kid, you know, and just walking around, like, just trying to find the dumb jokes that they hidden everywhere. You know, you can get him to draw a stick figure with a giant penis on the blackboard, and that was the funniest thing in the world to me when I was a kid, you know, just because games had never done that to me before, you know. Mm-hmm. So you know, I remember one guy sort of writing about Maniac Mansion and what that meant for him, you know. He'd played King's Quest and he'd sort of done that walk around and that sort of thing, and all of a sudden, like, you could microwave a hamster in a game, and it was just the most incredible thing to me. But, you know, I kind of think Sierra Games did it pretty well in having a points counter and having additional things in the points counter, you know?
Yeah, they did it in some games, yeah.
Yeah, one thing I really love about good old Gold Rush, if I'm allowed to talk about that game yet again, is I'm going to go back to Planescape Torment and in Gold Rush, because they both do it very well, okay. is there's a park, and there's a sign in the grass that says, you know, don't walk on the grass. And if you walk on the grass when there's a police officer nearby, he sort of blows his whistle and he comes over to you and warns you, and you lose a point. Mm-hmm. And that point's gone from your score for the rest of the game. You're like, oh, man, you know, I shouldn't have walked on that grass. I love that. I really, really love that. Because it doesn't change anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you get an extra reward for having a full score at the end of the game or anything.
But you did something and the game world reacted. And to me, that is incredible.
Yeah.
That's super enjoyable. You know, there's a thing in Planescape Torment where people always ask you your name, and the character is literally called the Nameless One, so you don't know your name, but you can lie and you can tell them a name that you made up.
Sure.
And if you keep telling them people this name, that person actually comes into existence in the game.
Oh, world. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know,
I didn't get that, game, but yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, it's the idea of a game reacting to your pranks, reacting to your exploration. If you poke at a thing and it sort of makes a noise, then you want to keep poking it to see what different noises it can make, you know?
Yeah. The new King's Quest did something a little like this in Chapter 3. There's the whole bit where you're like, you're trapped in the tower and you're trying to woo one of the two princesses, which end up becoming their canonical Valenice. And when you're first introducing yourself to them, you can introduce to yourself, I mean, you have to introduce to yourself to them separately, but you can introduce yourself as King Graham, the wise, the brave, or the compassionate. And it seems like kind of a silly thing, because it's like, oh, well, why wouldn't he just say that automatically? But if you're inconsistent and you tell one of them, like, the wise, and the other one you say the compassionate, like, there's a scene later on where he's asleep and he hears them talking about him in the, through the wall. And one will be like, oh, so what do you think about King Graham the Wise? And she's like, what? He told me he was King Graham the Compassionate. And they're like, oh, well, why would he say that? And it kind of affects how they perceive you, which is, it's a cool little touch. And it definitely is, a thing about reactions and things. Getting a little bit more into another thing I wanted to talk about, which was how the game reacts to your character, or how your character reacts to how you're playing the game. Because that's another aspect of things that I'm playing with, too.
One other thing I want to talk about briefly before we go into that is I get a bit frustrated with games that try to throw morality at you after they force you to do a thing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's one thing I really noticed in Homefront is there's these scenes that they're like, oh, this is horrible and everything like that. I'm like, well, the mission was literally to shoot all these guys. So, you know, you don't get to tell me afterwards that was a horrible tragedy. You don't get to say that because you told me to do it, you know.
Right.
But in the first Deus Ex, if you go into, like, the women's bathroom and, like, disrupt someone in there that's, like, washing their hands, you get told off for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of those things I didn't get to choose, so I shouldn't be told. If when I'm told off for it, I'm like, well, I had to do it. That's how the game plays. It's tough, you know, deal with it. The other one, I'm like, yeah, you caught me, you know. Yeah. That was stupid of me. So it's this really, if you're going to tell me off for something, it's not going to feel very genuine if you force me to do it before you told me off for it.
Sure.
If I chose to do it and didn't have to do it and then you tell me off, then that's awesome. I love that. I really do. And Deus Ex is a great example of that.
Good.
You know, and that person, if you sort of don't do that later on, like way, way, way later on in the game, she'll help you out. But, you know, if you, you know, weren't very respectful of her personal space, then she won't help you way, way, way later in the game, which is cool, you know?
Yeah, and it makes sense, because, I mean, that's... Yeah, that's how people tend to react to things like that.
It's the game reacting to you.
Exactly.
And that's how it should be.
So another example I wanted to talk about, which I just put in as well, and I'm going to try not to spoil too much either, was, again, with the ashes. So, like, there's a character that you're talking to, who you're interrogating, who knows this person who died, and you're trying to... sort of figure out what their relationship with them is, and they're not really talking. So there's a point where you can ask them about this character's death, and they'll be like, oh my god, I didn't know. And they're like, no, you can't be telling the truth. You're lying. You can't be, this can't be right. Mm-hmm. And the mischievous, silly person in me, because it was late when I was writing this scene, was like, wouldn't it be funny if, you know, you're carrying these ashes and you just be like, look, I have the ashes right here. Say hello. And so I was like, that's pretty funny, but it's sort of out of character for, you know, what we've established this guy as so far. But then I thought, well, not really, because throughout the rest of the game, there's a couple of instances where you can be that much of an asshole to other characters and you suffer the consequences for it. So what I decided to do was leave that in as a little extra bonus if you've chosen the asshole options with the other characters in the previous cases, he'll automatically do that because I feel that the player has shaped his personality in such a way that he would do that at this point.
Interesting.
So that's something to consider. Yeah. And of course, him doing that obviously has certain consequences with the guy he's talking to.
Yeah.
So yeah, it all sort of builds up, and yeah, changes that sort of thing. So I wanted to talk. Go ahead.
I think it's interesting and also satisfying as a player to see that stuff, especially if you realize like that's a result of my choice. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Dave's doing that in Unavowed with a certain. Depending on who you took with you on a mission or what origin you picked,
right.
You know, you get an option that you're like, oh, I wouldn't have had that unless I had this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you meet a cop from before and you're like, oh, I know this guy or this person, you know. So the story, it's only little stuff.
Yeah.
But you see it in a slightly different light that you're like, oh, I wouldn't have thought it would go like that because last time I played it as this guy. So, yeah, that's cool. Right.
Yeah, there's also, I mean, I'm doing that too, in that there's a certain character in this case also who, if you've messed your life up to a certain degree, which I won't get into because I want to keep some surprises, then you have certain options with this character, and if not, then you don't, which is very vague and very deliberately vague, but yeah, anyway.
I mean, it does add a lot of work as well.
It does, but as long as... Yeah. I mean, I still have yet to feel overwhelmed by the scope that I've set for myself. But then again, that might just be because I'm used to it by now, I guess.
We've been doing this so long. You're longer than me by a long way.
Yeah, so it's fun to actually branch out and try these different things. And yeah, I mean, I have to think about things a little bit more carefully, but at the same time, it's more rewarding, I find. I mean, I always say that my narrative branching and stuff sounds a lot more complex than it actually is because I feel that it is, but yeah, I don't know. I think Dave's stuff in Unavowed is way more complex than anything I'm doing. But
I mean, it is just by default. He has to write, you know, four different possible things for each encounter.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. But going back, I wanted to ask you about City because we've talked about City a little bit here, but I remember you mentioning something about drinking soda makes you hallucinate and you can just like spray paint all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I went out in pretty much a fair bit of detail one time on the podcast, but yeah, I had this idea that like you're in a world and the world's full of stuff, and if you pay attention to the stuff, of course, the world should react. So, you know,
in a world, there's the full bottle of stuff. Soda
and the And the soda says don't drink more than two in a day.
Right.
So, of course, if the people read that and think, well, I wonder what happens if you drink more than two in a day, something should happen for them, you know?
Sure.
And, you know, and yeah, you can find a sort of spray paint can and you can graffiti various things, which Edna and Harvey the Breakout also did. You know, you can just sort of vandalize the whole asylum. But yeah, and you know, and I figured like, you know, if you do enough graffiti, there should be a news story about it on the news terminal because
you're right.
You want to So, you know, that was a fun thing. And if you clean it up, because you can clean it up as well, there should be another news story that said, like, you know, local residents taking to the streets to clean up, you know, showing pride in their thing. I was just like, it'd be fun to show people that.
Yeah, that's something that, to bring up GTA again, I remember when San Andreas came out, they made this whole big thing about how there was going to be news reports that were reacting to stuff that you did. And they kept on with this in all GTA games after that. But that was cool. Like, you'd do a mission and then you'd hear a news report about, oh, this happened. It's like, oh, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I always like that kind of idea of your actions. Because a lot of the times in a game, you'll do a mission and then that's done. And then you never hear about it ever again.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of, it belittles what you did.
Yeah.
Because there's no resounding sort of feedback from that into the world itself. It's just like, well, you did a thing, that's done, you know.
You're sort of in a vacuum at that point.
Yeah, each mission often stands alone. And, you know, sometimes the plot will tie together, but outside of the mission context, you never feel that sort of weight of your actions. And it's nice. You know, sometimes it's just the littlest things. The Witcher 2, one thing that I love about it that it did is, you know, when you kill certain monsters, you have a hook on your belt and you can hang part of that monster on your hook and just walk around town and people see that. And, you know, you get stat bonuses from it because people see that and like, oh, he's the guy that killed the thing. And, you know, Fable tried that, you know, where you get a reputation and your actions shape your thing.
Right.
It allows sort of an infinitely exponential growth of complexity, but it doesn't have to be that complex. Sometimes it can be just a little thing.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but I've completely drawn a blank. Oh, right. Yeah. So like, no, it's fine. I just remembered. You said you had a newspaper. Yeah. If you have a newspaper in your game, then yeah, it's fun to put in stuff that reflects what you've been doing, especially if stuff that you've been doing obviously is going to make the news, just things that you've affected. Yeah. It's nice to see that sort of thing.
You know, and sort of Day of the Tentacle turn that into a gameplay element where, you know, way further into the future, look at the thing that you did back then. Look what that did now. You know,
Day of the Tentacle made some
fun puzzles with that.
Yeah, I did that very, very briefly in A Golden Wake, where there's the bit with the bank robbery, and depending on how you finish that, you can either convince the robber to leave, or he just robs the bank, or robs you, actually, and you pay him off to leave. And then there's a newspaper later on when there's a passage of time, and at the bottom the article either changes, you know, talking about, like, the headline, basically, because you can't read the article because it's how pixelated it is. But, yeah, the headline either says, oh, robbery at bank foiled by banks, or local bank robbed, or whatever. And it's a little thing, but it's sort of there to, like, okay, look, you made a difference. Whereas, I mean, in Lamplight City, obviously, I'm going to make it a lot more, it's going to be a bit more obvious, because there's a newspaper that you can read at the beginning of each case, and it'll definitely have, like, I haven't implemented it yet, but I definitely want to put in stuff like, you know, the cases that you've been investigating obviously will have made the news, and so depending on how you solve them, the report will change. So that's always a fun thing to do.
In the old Fallout games, and Arcanum does the same, where, you know, you finish the game and they're like, well, this is what happened to this town.
Sure.
This is what happened to this settlement as a result of your actions. Mm-hmm. It makes you sort of think, oh, you know, I could have done that differently, or I wonder what would have happened if I did this, or, you know, I didn't quite save that. Next playthrough, I'm going to save that town, you know.
Right.
I mean, we've covered this enough times before, but having actions with consequence and weight, you know, it's a resounding effect on the player because you're like, oh yeah, I matter.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So, yeah. You're not just playing a game. You just feel more immersed in this world and you feel...
Yeah, you're not just doing what you're told. You're making a choice here. You know, you picked that path. You didn't just go, they didn't just say, oh, well, now you do this, so you do the thing, and they're like, oh, well, bad thing happened. There's no like, oh, well, I should have done that differently, or I could have done this. It's just like, oh, well, that's the story of the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ah, well. Well, good. Anything else you'd like to add? You sound like you're getting sleepy.
Oh, I was sleepy when we started.
Well, you sound sleepy now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. Then let's wrap this up.
I mean, it's 2 a.m.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, well, good. I hope that we've helped given you all some food for thought and delicious. So...
Oh, dear.
That is our podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at Grundislav Games.
I am at Ben_304. And together we are at BCT_podcast.
Very good. Well, I will bid you adieu and have a lovely sleep and all that. And we'll see you next time.
I hope you have a fun day.
Thank you. And I hope for all of you who celebrate Thanksgiving, have a happy Thanksgiving next week. We won't be here for next week's Thanksgiving thingy-majiggy, but...
Well, you're all going away, aren't you?
I'll be back for then, but yeah, it's... Anyway, I don't think my mom would be a good guest for the podcast.
No, I think she would. I think she'd enjoy talking to us on the podcast.
She might.
Her and I can talk about hidden object games.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, her and I can talk about the... Oh, what's it called? The mansion one. Oh, Gardenscapes.
Gardenscapes. I don't think she's played Gardenscapes so in a long time.
I've finished it twice.
Right. Bye.
Goodbye.